How meaningful is it for your work? Really, I think the way it sounds is, you know, over at least a decade, you know, seeing here with Private White, you know, being found, being confirmed, and now going to enter his final resting place this weekend. How gratifying is it for your efforts to pay off the way they are going to be here on Saturday?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Private First Class Glenn White is finally coming home after almost 78 years being classified as missing in action. So actually being an archaeologist that works to recover these fallen men and then seeing them actually brought home to their families is, you know, something that you can't really put into words. It's not a normal occurrence that you would think, you know, as an archaeologist, you don't normally meet the families of the individuals you're recovering. So to be able to go to these funerals and meet them and hear stories about these men growing up is, you know, it's hard to explain, right?
Right, absolutely. Well, you brought up a question that I wanted to ask you, and that's really how you wound up getting into archaeology and then specifically this niche realm of archaeology.
Right, it's very specific. So my background is in Near Eastern archaeology, actually. And then I went on to grad school into human osteology. So I'm actually an osteoarchaeologist. So I've got a degree in archaeology, and then I went on to kind of focus a little bit more on human remains and ancient disease. And then I got pulled into working with History Flight of my background is in medieval medicine, and I thought it was interesting, but I couldn't really give back, I guess, to individuals that are still around. My grandparents, both my grandfathers fought in the Pacific. So I think it's really interesting to hear stories from them when I was growing up about their time in the Pacific, and then looking a little bit more into missing in action. And there's almost 82,000 missing in action service members worldwide. And that's a number that's going down, but it's a huge number, and it's going to take a really long time for individuals like myself to find these men and women and bring them home. So it's a huge effort. I'm glad that I can do my part of what I went to school for, is studying human remains to look and find these men and bring them back home.
Indeed. So it sounds like almost a natural progression for you, even though it may not have seemed like that at the time, but it seems like a natural progression to get into the field here and helping out.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, I wanted to use the knowledge I gained through school to give back to family members that are still around, because it's, especially with the World War II service members that are missing, their family members and people that remembered them were losing them fast. So it's kind of, we're in a race against time to bring these men home to their sisters and brothers that knew them, you know, instead of just a long distance relative that just grew up hearing stories about these individuals.
It sounds like History Flight has several different components of one of these really archaeological efforts. Maybe you can talk about the overall effort and then kind of what your role is here in a general term.
Yeah, so we do a multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary approach, right? So we've got service members that are retired. We've got scientists that are just regular archaeologists that work on recovery. And then there's people like me that do the osteological work. We've got people that look at material evidence, so artifacts that would be buried with these men that would help say, yes, this is an American soldier. Or no, this is a Japanese individual or a Korean individual that we also find specifically on Tarawa. But we also do plane crash recoveries over in Europe. We're getting into the Philippines. We're going, you know, all across the world because, like I said before, there's 82,000 missing in action service members. So instead of just focusing solely on Tarawa, we're branching out to different areas and using different techniques that are people's strengths. So plane crash recovery is not something that I have been trained in specifically, but willing to learn, right? And then utilizing people like myself that are osteologists to go through and work with, this is human, because we find a lot of animal remains, especially on Tarawa. So go through and weed out, you know, what we can, and then turn it over to the government And then they're the ones that actually do the specific DNA analysis and identification process in Hawaii.
Gotcha. Understood. Is Tarawa your first site, or is that actually, have you been at other locations before getting to Tarawa and starting that off?
Yeah, I've only ever worked on Tarawa, so I've been a member of History Flight almost 3 years. So I've only ever deployed out to Tarawa, but we've had teams that have gone over to Europe. We've got teams over in the Philippines, but I haven't had the opportunity to go over there yet.
Understood. Okay, what is it like on Tarawa? And talk a little bit about the effort to find the soldiers that were buried in the mass grave and ultimately led to the finding of Glenn White.
Mm-hmm. So Tarawa is real close to the equator. It's very hot and humid. It's a very small strip of sand. So it's an atoll, actually. So it's a coral atoll. So there's a huge lagoon, and then Baseo is the one island where the battle actually occurred. It's 1 square mile, so roughly the size of Central Park. There's approximately 60,000 individuals that currently live on that 1 square mile of modern inhabitants. So you're working in people's yards, you're moving people's houses, you've got a pig pen that's within arm reach of where you're excavating. You've got to really maneuver to get to these men with the modern population that lives there. And they're amazing. The local group is very welcoming to us. We've got 10 local nationals that work with us, and they're the lifeline of our group out there. They're the happiest group of guys. Their families come, they hang out with us, their kids bring us lunch. Working with them just is it's an honor to work with them, honestly. And the individuals, when we're working on their property, really understand, like, hey, there's a U.S. Marine or a sailor that's buried under our house. These Americans are here to retrieve them and take them home. And they fully understand that. And we try to explain as best to them, show them pictures of these repatriations that we do, of an identification that comes out, show them, remember the individuals that we are working in this area, this is that man. This is him going home to, like, Private First Class White, going home to Kansas, just showing them so they can get a little bit of tangible, proof of, yeah, this is an actual person, this is what they look like, this is their family. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's really cool. Yeah, but the local population's amazing. They're very friendly and appreciative of us going there to retrieve these individuals. And, it was a horribly bloody battle. There's live ammunition everywhere. There's naval rounds, there's grenades, there's obviously bullets everywhere. And we're removing these unexploded ordnance from their property. So it really is a good thing to do.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Obviously there was a lot of work, and there's also a lot done in order to confirm identities before the federal government confirmed and then moved along to bring Private White home. I guess maybe my last question is talk about that confirmation process once the remains are exhumed and making sure those soldiers get where they need to go and finally get a chance to rest.
Right. So the government, the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency is who we work with. So DPAA is their name. They're based in Honolulu. This is their main lab. They have a whole folder on all of these individuals of their next of kin, their hometown, all their enlistment papers, their casualty cards, all their records that are from when they enlisted to when the government, usually about 1949 for all these men, notified the family saying, we're unable to locate your son or your brother or your husband. We're really sorry, but he's now listed as non-recoverable. So they have this whole file built on these men. And they go through, when we say, okay, we've got an individual, send them back to Hawaii, they'll pull that file that says, okay, they're buried in this supposed burial robe in this cemetery. They'll look at, the main thing is dental records. So they kept pretty good dental records of these men when they enlisted. So you can pull a dental match, like their fillings that they had, any teeth that are extracted. And then they can do chest x-rays. Is a pretty interesting way that they're doing new identifications. So they did a tuberculosis test, right? They took a chest x-ray, and you can actually match up the clavicle from the bones that we recover, take an x-ray of that, and then you can actually match the morphology of the bone and how it's fused to do an identification, which is amazing. And then, of course, DNA. So DNA is going to be the most expensive, but it's the most reliable, in my opinion, of providing an actual identification. So the DPAA and the government will contact the next of kin for these missing men, and then they'll ask for a DNA sample. So they'll send in a buccal swab, and then they can go through and do a DNA match. Usually they do a femur sample. They'll take a sample of the individual femur, and then they can run DNA that way. So it's pretty interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A lot of effort goes into it. So they don't just do an identification off of, say, like a dog tag or any we call it like ID media, because it's not necessarily that person, if that makes sense. So a dog tag might have fallen during the battle, or somebody might have picked up his buddy's dog tag that got killed and he put it in his pocket and then that man got killed. So it's not necessarily, if you find a dog tag, it's not necessarily that individual. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I guess my last question, that kind of reflects on kind of how we opened up the interview, is, you know, with Private White and others coming home, I guess what's going to be coming, going through your mind here this weekend as Private White's laid to rest here and maybe some other soldiers across the world?
Yeah, that's what we've got about six individuals coming home within the next 2 months. So it's going to be amazing to see that. And on Saturday is actual National POW MIA Remembrance Day. So it's really special that Private First Class White is getting buried. So I'll be tuning into the news, seeing everything. I unfortunately won't be able to make it to Kansas. I'm in Virginia now. Won't make it out to that funeral, but we'll definitely be tuning in, and History Flight representatives will be there. So it'll be special for sure.